The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
You're very welcome along to the Paddy Power Half Hour. We're with you for the next half hour, and we're going to preview the games of the weekend. It obviously starts tonight with Southampton and Leicester. Liverpool, Tottenham, the pick of them. And our football coverage brought to you with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, remember you can visit dunlewy.net. And the Paddy Power special odds, well, the ACCA insurance we've got this week. Money back as a free bet. If one leg of your four plus fold, same goal, multi lets you down, and terms and conditions apply. Joined in the studio by Ronan Mullen and Enda Cole. Ronan is back from Japan. And my question would be, what kind of Premier League coverage do you get in Japan?
Well, it's a huge thing over there. Yeah. You've noticed that the kickoff times over here have been changed to accommodate that time zone a lot more. So the games were available. It's just we were always on the move, so it wasn't quite as accessible.
Very late at night.
Like at what would be prime time for us, I suppose, in Japanese terms. So it is accessible. It's just like while the games are available, they're not always being televised in the bar as you might expect. So they'll be showing rugby, they'll be showing baseball, they'll be showing everything but the football. But the one game I did get to see, Phil. Newcastle United against Manchester United.
Yeah.
That was Steve Bruce sticking it to his old team. Was that his first win over Manchester United?
As a manager. So are you watching this in a small bar, like loads of people just packed in?
Yeah.
Quite a sweaty...
I'd say about 100 people in there, 99 Man United fans.
Really?
And one Newcastle fan. And he was very enthused by the whole thing. I don't know how much of a Newcastle fan he was. He was wearing this like Latter-day 90s Newcastle top, Kieran Dyer era, I think.
Yeah.
And he was very, very delighted. But Matty Longstaff, I was impressed.
Yeah, those Longstaffs are going well. Right. I think we'll start with Liverpool-Tottenham. It's the pick of the weekend games. Liverpool drop points at Old Trafford, actually. That brings me on to something here now, because we would have talked about Liverpool going to Old Trafford last week.
What were you smoking, Phil?
Well, nothing. Nothing. As is the case, we talk about these things and... Yeah, we might put out a few snippets later in the day. So one of the things I said, which got a bit of a reaction, was it's not beyond the realm of possibility United could actually beat Liverpool. Now, up until the 85th minute, that was about to happen. Mm-hmm. But a few tweets I got. Here's hoping the players are smoking the same stuff he's smoking. That's coming from a United fan. Another one. Four crying laughing emojis to start the tweet. And I'm an Evertonian. United will be lucky to get away without a hammering. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say I told you so, because I also did say Bournemouth-Norwich, goal fest.
Mm.
Nil all, by the way. The only nil all.
It's a classic result. It's one of those ones that, you know, you stick into the both teams to score and it lets you down.
Right, Liverpool-Tottenham. So Liverpool dropped their first points of the season last week, but probably would have come away from Old Trafford thinking, no, a draw's not a bad result, because things didn't go their way. They didn't play very well. But they actually came away with a point. We're pushing for a winner.
Yeah, the way that Liverpool played against United, coming away with a draw is a good result, because they didn't play well at all.
They were awful.
At the right wing, I suppose Salah might have been a bit of a loss, but they can take positives from it as well. And Naby Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain are two of those positives they can take from it. And they played again this midweek.
Yeah.
And again, they were brilliant. So that's the positive they can take from it. Tottenham were awful last week again, but then bounced back during the week. So it's hard to tell where their form is at the minute. But I would say we'll see an improved Liverpool side this weekend.
Yeah, I think the fact that they're back at Anfield as well, Ronan, like they don't lose games at Anfield. Now, if they draw, the way things are with the league, because even the fact that this game is at 4:30 on Sunday, by the way, if you want to listen to it, it's going to be on Off the Ball, 4:30 kickoff. Nathan Murphy and David Myler. I know David Myler once scored at Anfield for Hull.
Yeah,
Liverpool won that game, but
he's a massive Liverpool fan as well.
So he scored at Anfield.
It was a big day.
It wasn't into the cop end, but nevertheless, it's still pretty impressive to say that you scored at Anfield. But if they were to draw, because City obviously play tomorrow at 12:30. We'll get on to City and Villa. We'll go a bit more in depth into it. But you would imagine City are winning that game. All of a sudden, there's only 3 points in it. We know Liverpool and City meet in a few weeks' time as well. So, you know, there's going to be pressure on Liverpool. But they do have a very good record at Anfield, and especially against Tottenham.
Mm. But what you would say about Tottenham is their home advantage hasn't really become a home advantage yet, so playing away from home isn't as much of a hurdle as it would have been in previous years. And you remember this fixture in the last two seasons has been full of drama, and it was only a last minute own goal last season that nicked it for Liverpool. Tottenham actually were the better team in the second half of that game, and then the previous season I think a series of penalties at the end and Harry Kane ultimately nicked a draw. So Tottenham will be well up for this game, and they know that their domestic season's sort of riding on this. Like, they've had such a poor start that these games have become maybe not must wins, but they must get results. And as you said, the pressure's also on Liverpool, because last time I was in, it looked like Liverpool were going to streak away, and in the subsequent weeks, Man City have just hung in there a little bit. And as you said, it's going to be a 3-point gap on Sunday, and it's going to be all focused on Liverpool.
Yeah, look, City obviously lost two games this season. They lost four last season. They probably could lose another two this season, but they don't really draw games. They just win these games. Yeah. And that's why when Liverpool draw games, it feels like, you know, not a good result. But I think they actually would take exception with the Old Trafford point, because it's just a fixture that doesn't usually go well for Liverpool. But let's talk about the two European performances. Obviously, Spurs win 5-0, Liverpool win 4-1. You probably think Liverpool's is more impressive.
Well, they're both playing poor enough opposition. Yeah. That's one thing, probably an asterisk beside the result. I would say on Liverpool's performance against Genk, it showed what their weakness is this year, and that's long ball over the top first time. I know they changed their defence about a bit, and Lovren is a bit of a basket case when it comes to that.
Yeah.
But United showed it against it as well, that is the weakness. If you get the ball forward with a first-time ball or a second-time ball, you can catch Liverpool on the break, because they are playing their line higher than they were last year. And VAR, you mentioned it a few weeks ago, has been helping them out this year, because the margin error is so much tighter.
Same thing happened on Wednesday, that Genk got the goal disallowed.
Yeah.
Marginal.
And Genk had two or three very good goal-scoring opportunities in the first half. So Liverpool can be caught like that. And you just wonder, do Tottenham have the pace on the break to do that? If Harry Kane's starting up front by himself, they're probably going to start with Lamela again, because he was good during the week. So it's whether whether Son's playing more centrally or whether he's playing more out as a winger role that's going to probably define how Tottenham go about this game. Tottenham, again, they were good during the week, but they were terrible last week. So they're just hot and cold this year. And I seen an interesting tweet from, I think it was from Jack Pitbrook, who covers Tottenham quite a bit, and he was mentioning that there could be signs of things to come for Tottenham with those players that are outgoing. None of them finished that game, and it's just, is that the way that Pochettino is going to be approaching these games now, that he's going to become a bit more ruthless with Alexa Eriksson, Vertonghen, Alderweireld? Are they going to finish the game against Tottenham? They're the best players on the Tottenham team, but
yeah,
they just haven't been performing.
And that's all well and good, Ronan, like leaving these guys out because their contracts are running out. But if you're replacing them with players that aren't as good, that could come back to bite you.
Yeah, and could he have looked any less enthused during the week by the goals were running in, and he was just sort of sitting sort of melancholy on the bench? So it just looks like everything's sort of not attached to Tottenham. The morale is all off. And while I think the players will sort of take it upon themselves, there's this sort of weird primetime element when you're playing. I saw it with Marcus Rashford last weekend, where he's been kind of off the boil in most games recently, but he knew everyone's watching this game and I need to rise to the occasion. I think Tottenham, like, leaving the managerial squabbles aside and the disharmony in the squad, I think it's going to be incumbent on themselves sort of to put in a performance.
Yeah, one thing Tottenham can do is they can change formations. They did it during the game last season at Anfield, where they gave up way too much space to the wing-backs, Liverpool's two, and he changed it the second half. Now, there was so much pressure on Liverpool in that game because it was part of the run-in and they eventually got the winner. Of course, there's going to be pressure on them on Sunday, but I don't think it'll be as much as it was last season. Is there a worry? One thing, looking at Liverpool the other night, the front three clicked, and if they click again on Sunday, especially early on, they could give Spurs a bit of a hiding.
Yeah, some of the passing moves that those forwards were doing during the week. I mean, I think everyone's seen the Firmino Rabona flick over the top, or even if you look at the skill level it took for Mo Salah's goal, it was just phenomenal stuff.
Yeah.
And if they're playing to that level, they're going to absolutely destroy this Tottenham defence, who have not been at the races at all this year. I would worry about them out wide, because Kyle Walker-Peters, he's not good enough for Tottenham at this stage. he might develop into a better fullback, but he's not good enough at this stage. And whether they play Davis or Rose on the left-hand side, you'd worry about both those, because with Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold going forward, down the right-hand side particularly, and you saw it against Brighton, the quality of defence hasn't been there, and Aaron Connolly ran riot against Alderweireld and Kyle Walker-Peters. So you'd worry if that's going to be a Mane and a Robertson down that side, who are much higher quality. So it could be 2 or 3-0 to Liverpool before Tottenham even start.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things that I took out from last week's game. Whatever about Salah missing, Mane then went over to the right, and he just wasn't as effective. When he plays on the left, there's not many better than them in that position, Ronan. But the midfield three of Liverpool, that's going to be what we'll be looking at. I presume Trent Alexander-Arnold's fine. Joe Matip, if he isn't coming back in, then he'll probably go with Lovren again. It doesn't look great for Joe Gomez, certainly. But now he's got a decision to make with his midfield three, because we know Fabinho plays these games now. What does he do? Jordan Henderson didn't start in Belgium. He tends to play these big games. So then it's one other player. Wijnaldum, does he want Oxlade-Chamberlain after those two goals? Does he want Naby Keita? And he talked about Keita a little bit last week after the game at Old Trafford, where, you know, we're still waiting on Naby Keita to kind of show why Liverpool paid all that money for him. It's stop start because of injuries. But if Liverpool get the player that they signed, the marauding midfielder with skill, you see his first touch the other night, it just flicked it off his back, then he can give them an extra layer in midfield.
Yeah, because Oxlade-Chamberlain got all the headlines, and rightly so, brilliant goals, and it's such a great story to see him back almost to his best. But I thought Keita was actually more impressive during the week and got involved in the play a lot, like was demanding the ball, which is good to see. I know Liverpool have this dynamic midfield, but sometimes that player in between the lines is sometimes lacking to maybe create stuff for the front three. And like, a lot was made in the summer, we've talked about Tottenham, but Liverpool's lack of recruitment, there was question marks around that, but presumably Klopp was banking on Chamberlain and Keita specifically rising to the fore, and both of them have shown they're ready to do that. And it is interesting you mentioned, like, Henderson always starts these games, but when push came to shove last weekend, he got the hook.
Yeah,
and like
second season in a row as well, because I remember he wasn't happy when he came off at Old Trafford last season. There was a little bit of an incident where he walked by Klopp and Klopp took an issue with it, but.
And it wasn't as if he was bringing on like another huge star like Lallana. Granted, has had great days in the past, but that was his first goal in a long time.
How many people, when Lallana came on, I'll be honest with you, I thought, why? And then he scored a few minutes later, and you're kind of left.
Is that down to Lallana's quality, or is that down to Marcus Rojo playing as a makeshift left centre back for United? I'd question the United defence in that case.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Give credit to Adam Lallana for being there.
It wasn't an exquisite ball or anything from Andy Robertson. It didn't have to be.
But it beat six defenders on the way there.
In fairness to Lallana, from day one since Klopp has gone in, he has always impressed with his work rate and his energy. I think back to even the Burnley game last season where he put in this unbelievable block that led to a goal for Mane, and Klopp has always liked them. Unfortunately for Lallana, he's just been injured all the time.
Yeah, like you feel sorry for a player like that because he does work hard and he is a quality player, but it's just I would just question whether he's good enough for that standard football. Like, he's probably like maybe a sixth or seventh place standard midfielder, but is he a good enough player to be starting in a Premier League challenging team? I don't think he is. Yeah. But you can't question his work rate or even his heart if you want to go that far.
So are we all going for a Liverpool win here?
Yeah.
I think Tottenham might get a point the third season in a row. Or no, for second season in three.
Yeah, they haven't. 2011 was the last time they won there. And here's one for you as well. Spurs are looking for a first away win against the team starting the day in first place in 23 matches. The last time they did it was a 2-0 win away to Blackburn in November 1992. Spurs have an awful away record.
Yeah, they're not great.
No, I think Spurs might score. But I could see Liverpool scoring 3 or 4 in this one.
Liverpool are going to start on the front foot, and they're going to end on the front foot. It's going to be one-way traffic for the majority of the game. Tottenham might nick one on the break.
Yeah, well, Liverpool are able to start well, then take the foot off the gas because they have a decent defence now, and then go again. We haven't even talked, like, Alisson is back in, made a few good saves in Genk, but just looked nice and assured even last week in his first game back in a few months at Old Trafford.
It just shows the importance of a good sub-goalkeeper as well, though. Like, Adrian was pretty good. He had a couple of gaffes, but...
I think, in fairness to him, he wasn't fit when he came into the team.
It was kind of a last-minute signing in the summer, wasn't it? So, and then you saw Sergio Romero last night for Manchester United. Like, the value of having a good sub-goalkeeper can't be underestimated, because if Liverpool had someone who was like letting in goals on a weekly basis, they'd be probably out of the title race already.
Well, they had two of them for many years, yeah. Right, so that game is at 4:30 on Sunday. Then Man City Villa, 12:30 tomorrow. And just the way things have worked in the last couple of weekends, now City are playing first, whereas it was the other way around. You think back to when Liverpool beat Leicester and then City went and lost at home to Wolves. So this is City's first home game in the league since that Wolves won. If you're wondering when was the last time Pep Guardiola lost back-to-back home games in the league, the answer would be never. He's lost 11 home games as a manager, and all 11 occasions they've won their next home match. So that doesn't bode well for Villa. That aside, the fact that City are a far better team than Villa.
Yeah, and Aston Villa went down 1-0 last week, and it was a Jack Grealish late goal that actually got them the win. So if they go behind again against City, they're not going to get back into it, because City won't allow them back into it. But again, City's defence is just, it's a bit all over the shop. Like, Aston Villa could cause them a bit of hassle. Whether they'll cause them enough hassle to actually win the game or get a result is a different story. But I can see them definitely putting Fernandinho under pressure, if Fernandinho indeed starts centre-back, which he probably will. And down that right-hand side, again, the left-back position for City, if you're looking at it that way, that's where you're going to cause them issues this year.
Yeah, well, it seems even just down the middle, Ronan. You think back to the Wolves game, and Otamendi was in there and Fernandinho. And the problem is, for Villa, they need to be able to get out. Obviously, City are great at pinning you in. If you can actually have the composure to play out and then beat the press, then it's quids in, because if you get a run at that City back four, whatever formation they're playing, then you're going to create opportunities. Like, even though Wolves won the game 2-0, they'd a few one-on-ones before Traore scored the two goals.
Yeah, and you mentioned Guardiola's home record is more or less impeccable, but like, even a top manager like this can't accommodate this many changing systems and injuries, because Rodri's out now and a keystone player since he arrived, and I'm not quite sure of the severity of that yet. I think it's probably going to be a month anyway, but he's just going to have to, like, Fernandinho's getting moved around. And like, Aston Villa, like you mentioned, their horrific record here. I think the last 9 fixtures, it's an aggregate score of 30-4, something like that. So it's crazy. And I just think Man City, while in Guardiola's first season, I think the early games, for some reason, Man City were slow out of the blocks, but that's kind of been put to bed of late, and you just fancy them to steamroll Villa, I think.
Yeah, there's so many City games where you sit down to watch them, and maybe not as much this season, though, where 10 minutes in, it's done. And you think, like, they score one, even you think back to the Watford game, that was done after pretty much 5 minutes. But Jack Grealish, if Villa are going to have any success, it's up to him. I mean, he scored in the last 2 games. You know, he's the one that got away for Ireland. It's one that's kind of cropped up again in recent weeks, whether of the two, Rice or Grealish, which one, if you could have had one, and I'd always go with Grealish because he's creative.
So much. He's such a brilliant midfielder, and he showed what he could do in the Championship, and it was just whether or not he could step it up a level, and he definitely has. And I was thinking about Aston Villa's midfield there. Has there been a better midfield for a side coming up from the Championship this year? Or, like, you have Conor Hourihan, who's
he's a good
player. Jack Grealish, who arguably could be playing at a higher level than he is right now. John McGinn, absolutely brilliant as well. So they have 3 really strong centre midfielders, and a couple others to come in if they aren't performing. So they're really strong in midfield going forward. Defensively in midfield, that's where they're going to have issues this year, I would say.
Yeah, the beauty of that midfield, that the players that Enda mentioned, Ronan, is they're ball carriers as well, apart from Howard, who obviously lets the ball do the work with his left foot. But McGinn can carry the ball, Grealish can carry the ball. That's something that, if you have that, you know, you can cause City a few problems. I still think that you just worry about what kind of rear guard action Villa will be able to put up tomorrow.
Yeah, and in the broader scheme of things, that line of continuity from last season, like, you saw Fulham last year made a hames of it by
Yeah.
Villa had a similar turnover, but at least they've kept that spine together. And it just means there's a link to last season. The spirit of that team remains. And, you know, they've been, the results haven't quite gone their way, but I have been impressed with how they've gone about things. And in, across the season, I think they'll be fine.
Also as well, Dean Smith deserves credit because some of these players that he brought in, he knew them. He had either scouted them or he they had played for him at different clubs as well. So, you know, he knew what kind of players he was getting. So that was the question at the start of the season. Are Villa the new Fulham? Well, so far they're not anyway. The half five game tomorrow, Burnley and Chelsea. Chelsea, 6 wins in a row in all competitions. Frank Lampard, football genius again.
Got a name for the young lads yet? It's not Frank's fledglings or...
No, I don't think we have.
Lampard's lambs.
No, we'll have
I
to
thought I've,
throw that to the floor.
I have heard that one before, maybe from you.
Well, listen, I've been trying to garner this for a while. So,
if ever there's a fixture though that can bring you back down to earth, it's Burnley away. So, they've bad run against Chelsea, especially at home. They're on a winless run of they've lost 4 of their last 5 at home to Chelsea, beaten their 4-0 last season. But they've picked up 9 points from 12 at Turf Moor. Only Liverpool have gone there and won. Only Liverpool have gone there and scored.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sean Dyche, he'll love this.
He has them back playing the way that they should have been playing last year. They're just absolute bullies.
Yeah.
And going up against the young side, that's what you want. He'll be going out telling those players to go out and batter those young players for Chelsea. Chelsea's pace might cause him a bit of... bit of issues, you know, Hudson-Odoi, Pulisic, might get a start.
He's starting to come good, isn't he?
He's had a couple of good appearances off the bench. It's just whether who Chelsea go for the forward line. Chris Wood could have a bit of pleasure against that Chelsea defence. So, like, you know, like Zuma's been, he's been fine, he's been all right, but defensively Chelsea can be got at, and the directedness of the Burnley attack could cause them a few issues this weekend.
Yeah, good to see Robbie Brady getting a run last week, and they were a little bit unfortunate. I don't know what you thought of the goal that Johnny Evans was fouled for, the what would have got Burnley a point away to Leicester last week. Minimal contact, VAR ruled it out. You're shaking your head, Enda, no?
Just VAR in general.
I thought we were...
We're not going to go into it because...
It's only half an hour.
It's not the show for it. It's
no.
Too long of a discussion.
What I would say, my concern about it before the start of the season was it would take over analysis at half-time and full-time where you wouldn't actually get to discuss goals that were scored. You were talking about things that were disallowed or whatever. But...
My thing initially was I liked the idea that it wasn't on the... on-field match official to make these decisions because the players can't be sort of getting up in his grill and giving him stick if he changes his decision. But now I think it's the opposite because you can't expect these junior officials who haven't had any actual on-field experience to overturn the likes of St. Martin Atkinson last week, which was a pivot decision potentially in the title race. Mm-hmm. So like, I think when all said and done, it's going to be incumbent on the on-field official to go over and look at the monitor, as much of a pain as that is for the viewer. I think that's the only way this is gonna work out.
What do we think, Burnley, Chelsea? Chelsea gonna be in seventh heaven tomorrow?
Yeah, I can see Chelsea. Chelsea will definitely get a couple of goals. It's just, I think Burnley will as well. I would probably go for a 2-2 draw.
I think there is a resilience about Chelsea now that maybe wasn't there at the start of the season. Like, I was at Old Trafford for the first game and they played really well going forward, but were so susceptible to counter-attacks.
It was naive,
laughable.
Yeah.
Now there is a bit of bite about them at the back, and if they can grind something out here, that would be a real sign of things to come for Frank Lampard.
Yeah, we're not sure if N'Golo Kante is going to play, so that will be definitely one to check out before. If you see the team sheet, Burnley, you'd start leaning a bit more towards them. I'm not saying you'd take them to win, but if Kante's not playing, Burnley have a better chance.
Kante's just one of these players that he's so underrated for a player who's so good, and everyone rates him very highly, but yet he's still so underrated.
It's just because he's quiet, he's not an outgoing personality. He just gets on, goes out on the pitch, does his stuff.
I think last year Sarri got a lot of stick for playing him in a more attacking position, but that was because Jorginho was playing by himself and they didn't have much defensive cover. Now Frank has given him a bit more of a roving role where he is doing the defensive work but also getting forward, and he's showing again that, you know, he can do the things going forward. He can pass the ball and he can score as well. He's got a couple of goals this year, so like he's been one of the best midfielders in the Premier League for the past 5 years.
His goal against Liverpool was excellent. By the way, Jorginho was playing pretty well, even when you consider there was Chelsea fans that didn't have much time from last season. Let's look at some of the other games. Right, I mentioned Liverpool Tottenham as a 4:30 on Sunday. There's other games at 4:30 as well. This is just the knock-on effect from the Europa League. Norwich and Manchester United. So United's win against Partizan last night is their first win away from home since the PSG game, but it's also 90 minutes I can't get back of my life. But
no shots on target.
No shots
in the
target.
Europa League yet for Manchester United.
Yeah, that's impressive.
In their two away games, that is.
Yeah,
they didn't get a shot on target.
Yeah, just more of the same sluggish, slow build-up that United have grown used to this year.
Yeah.
Partizan are fifth in the Serbian league at the minute, and
caused them problems.
Yeah, and United just again they were just so slow getting out of attack. It looks like Oli has gone for a five at the back, and that's after the Liverpool result. That's what he's going to stick with for the time being. I was impressed with Williams left back, but again, it's a Europa League. Is he going to be United's left back going forward? There's people calling for him already to be the starting left back for United.
Why not?
Because Luke Shaw has had plenty of opportunities to nail that position down, and he hasn't done it while he's been fit. And Ashley Young, obviously, the age profile would suggest that he's not going to be around for the long term. So if he stays in the team and can sort of, like, it's not going to take, there's not a high bar at the moment to be Manchester United's left back.
But United have been quite good defensively. Like, it's just going forward that's the issue. So I wouldn't be too worried about playing whether who's playing left back or whether it's a kid or not. Like it's just the midfield that you would worry about, and Paul Pogba's out again for this game, so you just wonder where the goals are going to come from. I would imagine Martial's going to come in for a start this weekend.
He was poor last night. I know it was his first game, but he just kind of plodded along. And okay, his penalty was good, but
that's actually how United started at the start of the season, though, was a five at the back with Martial and Rashford up front, and James playing sort of a supporting role. So I would imagine they're going to change back to that now that Martial's back fit and James is firing all cylinders as well. So
yeah,
Norwich is the type of game that you'd imagine United will, off the smaller teams, United will get good value out of playing Norwich because they're a team that's going to come forward against them, as opposed to the smaller sides that just park the bus against them, and that's where they struggle.
That's it. What do you do if you're Norwich? Because Ronan, we've seen the way Norwich, from the opening night of the season, they went to Anfield and they had their way of playing, and they conceded four goals. Now they scored and they created chances, but you were looking at it thinking that's probably not going to keep you in the Premier League. Then they go and beat Newcastle comfortably. They beat Manchester City, which shocked us all. That's their only two wins. So both their wins this season have come at home. But will they think, do you know what, let's go at United, because United are not, like, don't give them the respect of who they were. Let's look at who they are at the moment.
Mm. But as plodding as United have been going forward, like, Norwich have had their own troubles with injuries, especially centre-back. So if United can get Rashford and Martial in those central areas up front, you know, they can get at them. And it's funny how things have transpired, because of all the injuries United have, the profile means that they have lots of fit defenders, but not much else. So they've had to go back to five at the back, and he's going to persevere with it. Like, I suppose the easiest thing to fix, United, there's lots of problems to fix, but the easiest thing is to try and keep goals out. So if they can start keeping clean sheets and maybe nicking goals, they've gotten lots of penalties this season. So if they can get a couple of 1-0s, build some momentum, and then as the likes of Pogba come back into contention for the Christmas period, maybe they can start to put something together. But he wouldn't be overly hopeful at the moment.
They've actually got a nice run of fixtures. Like, the games that they have a very good chance of picking up points. Because, you know, you're looking at their tally, 10 points. This is their lowest since 1986. Big Ron, after 9 games, had 5 points. And Big Ron was gone. They brought in this lad called Alex Ferguson. Did all right.
Yeah, I don't think there's any Alex Fergusons out there anymore, though.
No. I
wouldn't be looking too far into how bad United have been simply because of the squad they have. Like, Oli, I don't think he is the man for the job in the long term, but at the same time, if you bring in anybody at this stage of the season, they still have the same squad.
Yeah.
So by the sounds of it, they're hopeful of getting a couple of signings, if not four, I heard was the number they're looking to get in January. So
seems so far away, though. It
does.
It's the 25th of October, and you're thinking, if you're Solskjaer, can he get them to January?
I would say he can. He'll scrape through it. United aren't going to be expected to do anything this year, so I can't see them sacking Solskjaer before Christmas. If he continues the way after getting a couple of signings in January, if that happens, if he makes it to March, he'll be lucky if the fixtures keep going the way they are.
You have to say that the players he did bring in have improved the squad. All three of them have been a success. So if he can, that's a good strike rate to begin with. So if he can keep that going in the next two transfer windows, you know, this time next year, if he's still there, you'd expect things are a lot better. But as
League champions,
that's a big if. Well, maybe
no. It's obviously they want to get challenged for the top four. So that game is at 4:30. Another one that kicks off at 4:30, Arsenal Crystal Palace. And Palace won here last season, Ronan. Arsenal pulled it out of the bag late last night. Nicola Pepe, two free kicks. The second one was class. And up until that, he had only scored one goal. It was from a penalty spot.
Yeah.
From the penalty spot. People expected big things from this lad because, obviously, the price tag, the way he played with Lille. But Lille were a surprise package last season. Yeah. I saw them play a few games where, you know, they were quite happy to sit in. Pepe plays on the break, a bit similar to the way Arsenal played at Anfield, and we kind of got a glimpse of how good Pepe could be that day, because he certainly gave Virgil van Dijk a few things to think about. But he's been left out of the team a few times. I saw an Emery out banner.
Yeah,
some kid made up a little banner. He must have been doing arts and crafts yesterday. And he said, I'm going to the Emirates tonight, I'm going to bring an Emery out. Where is this coming from?
I don't know. He doesn't have this, he doesn't really stimulate the fan base. If Arsenal aren't going well, he doesn't have the persona that's going to, you know, keep you on side, in a way that maybe when Klopp first came to Liverpool, things weren't, he was trying to style the club in his own image, but that was always going to take time. But he has this sort of larger than life persona, and people were happy to go along with him. Emery doesn't have that, and they were so porous against Sheffield United on Monday night. It was poor. He kind of stuck to his guns in a way that would frustrate you if you're an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
I have to imagine. And you mentioned Pepe, he had a big chance that night, and
it was nil all at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that could have been a totally different game. But Sheffield United were really impressive in that game. Last night Arsenal managed to turn things around, and Pepe has that X factor that they probably have been lacking in recent years. And it's ironic, they were linked with Wilfried Zaha for months and months, and then all of a sudden it was Pepe they went for. So Zaha will have a point to prove if he...
And if Palace win, they go ahead of Arsenal. But
Palace have been very good this year.
They have, and
they've been very good.
I had Roy Hodgson favoured for the sack.
So did I. And as I said, look, we've no problem being on this show and putting our hand up and saying we got that wrong.
Yeah, no, he's been...
And he proved... Now, I would say when we did make that prediction at the time, it looked like Zaha was leaving. It was pre-season predictions. But it's certainly a tough game for Arsenal. Mesut Ozil. See, when you don't win games or you're struggling in games, and his name will always get brought up. But would he really make a big difference in that Arsenal team? A guy that walks around?
He doesn't suit Emery's style of play. And that's just the way it is. It's the same as... It's the same as bringing someone like, say, Dybala, when Dybala was linked with United, bringing him in. He's one of these players that gets the ball down and picks out the pass. He's not a play-on-the-break kind of player. And Ozil's just not going to get into this Arsenal team this year because he's not that type of player, and he doesn't work hard enough for Emery's high-intensity press as well. But he wouldn't be the names I'd be picking out for the fact that Emery's not starting in the Premier League. You're looking at some of the players like Bellerin. Tierney hasn't had an appearance in the Premier League this year.
Yeah, he played again last night.
Yeah, Tierney played again last night in the Europa League. Torreira was starting in midfield again. He's going with Xhaka and Guendouzi in the Premier League for some reason. Martinelli has 6 goals this year in all competitions, scored again last night in the Europa League, but he's only played 45 minutes in the Premier League. So he's mix and matching his teams for each competition, and I think he's going to need to settle on this is the best team. And at the minute, he's not doing that. I think he's going with Chambers out right back instead of Bellerin.
I think in fairness,
which is strange.
Bellerin's coming back from injury. I'd say he's trying to ease him in. I'd say the same with Tierney.
Yeah, but at some stage of the season, it's going to get to the stage where how long is enough time for them to get back?
I'd say they've
played three Europa League games. They surely have enough in their locker now to start in the Premier League.
I would be surprised if they're not in the team in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah,
I think eventually they have to. And obviously Tierney then gets... We get to see what he's really all about. You've talked him upended, so... Right, I know we're running out of time, so we'll talk about some of the other fixtures. West Ham, Sheffield United, you're going to this game tomorrow.
I am.
Have you got binoculars?
I don't have. I'm bringing my glasses, though. It's going to be needed for the London Stadium. But I'm looking forward to see some of the Irish players out there as well. Hopefully, Dave McGoldrick will come back from injury as well. I'm not sure if he's fully fit or not, but Sheffield United really, really impresses this year. And sometimes you see these teams coming up that are really well drilled and it only works at home.
Yeah.
Sheffield United haven't lost an away game this year.
No, they won at Goodison as well.
Three draws and a win. So
they're hard to break down.
They're very, very good. They're very well drilled, and defensively they're going to be hard to get at. And West Ham could struggle again this week. I would go with a draw if I'm going with anything in this game.
I just hope you see a few goals.
Yeah, I would say Yarmolenko will come back into the starting team for West Ham this week. They were pretty poor against an Everton side that needed to win to keep their boss's job. So I wouldn't look too far into that game, to be honest.
Let's go to Everton. Everton away to the mighty Brighton tomorrow. Enda's mighty Brighton.
They lost last week, so I should have brought some of the mean tweets that I got as well.
They were unlucky in that one, but Ronan, Everton needed that win. Marcus Silva under pressure, and away from home is where they've struggled. So, you know, he stopped the bleeding a bit last week, but it's away from home where they've really struggled.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the Marco Silva project, because I think the jury has been out and then back in on him ever since he came to England. So, yeah, they have to get their away form on track, because, like we talked before the season about them, much like Leicester being potential, you know, crash the party in the top four, but they've looked a mile off it. So they need to be picking up 3 points against these. And Brighton, like, we were bemoaning the loss of Chris Hughton, that he was let go seemingly harshly, but like Potter has got them playing a bit more progressive football, and you know they're going to have to do that if they're going to stay in the league in the long term. So yep, it should be a good game, I
absolutely
think.
And the first thing we do tomorrow is we'll be looking at the team sheets. We'll be seeing, is Aaron Connolly starting and is Seamus Coleman starting?
Yeah,
because Sidibe played well.
Yeah, I don't think Seamus Coleman's coming back into that side straight away.
It's going to be an interesting one. Watford, Bournemouth is another fixture. Quick one on that. Anyone? Any thoughts on that one?
Bournemouth to win by 2 or 3 goals.
Newcastle Wolves on Sunday. Just to remind you, there's commentary on that one. It's Dave McIntyre and Brian Kerr at St James's Park. That's a 2 o'clock kickoff and off the ball. And then we've got Southampton Leicester tonight, 8 o'clock. Leicester will go second if they win that game. All hail Brendan Rodgers, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jamie Vardy.
They're going to finish top four. We've been arguing about this on off air all the time. They're going to finish top four.
What do you think? I don't think so.
It's just all about Jamie Vardy, isn't it? He's no player scored more goals than him since Rodgers arrived, and like people talk about Jamie Vardy in certain terms, but like
talk
his goal record.
They talk about all the Vardys these days.
Has there been?
That's another thing I missed when I was away. People were making that reference when I came back. I had no idea what they were talking about.
Unbelievable. He actually got a lot of abuse from the fans last week, and he did what he does best. He scored.
Yeah.
Cut the ears.
Has there been a more a one season wonder that has carried on his form more than Jamie Vardy in the last couple of seasons?
He's no longer a one season wonder.
No.
But do we think Leicester are going to win this game tonight?
Yeah, I would say so. Leicester they've got quality throughout. Their midfield is up there in the top four quality of midfields, and Southampton have just been disappointing this year. Disappointing. Yeah.
What's Southampton?
It's only word.
Only 1 point at home this season, and that was against Man United, of course. So
I actually think they're going to get something tonight. I put a lot of faith in Hasenhüttl at the start of the season. I think during the international break, worked with them tactically. Unlucky not to beat Wolves last week. I think they might actually get something from Leicester. So we'll watch that one as Leicester win 7-0.
Is St Mary's the least frightening home ground to go to?
I don't know. It's certainly not a patch on the Dell. That was a proper ground. That is our lot for the Paddy Power half hour. Back next Friday to preview more of the weekend's action. Enjoy all the football, and we'll chat to you then. Bye bye.
The Paddy Power half hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.